spark to fight back against her. She brushed her lips against his, and he could smell the musky sexual odor of her body. It filled his lungs and seemed to spread around his body in the same way that her mind spread around his consciousness. She began to kiss him, her tongue probing and licking, nibbling at his mouth. He felt her hands start to rove across his body, fingers searching for openings in his clothing. She was using every sensual trick she knew to break down his defenses. To a casual onlooker, it wouldn't have seemed so, but Ryan was fighting one of the most important battles of his life. He knew that if he gave in to her, then he would be enslaved and his friends doomed. He had been here before. Countess Katia Beausoleil, the sadistic baron who had wanted to keep him as her personal stud, and who had perished when they plunged into a raging river. Her enchantments had been subtler, and he had resisted those. Ryan pulled his head away from hers, a jerky, hesitant movement, slowed by the lack of control he now seemed to have over his own body.
No, you won't.
Ryan didn't get a chance to finish. While he had been struggling mentally, he had been unable to hear the approach from behind.
Sometimes I wish I'd stayed at Brody's.
He bit into his lip. His mouth ran salty with his own blood, but the distraction of the pain was working. Muscles that screamed for freedom of movement, or rest, were once again blanked out enough to allow him to carry on. The air duct had run for what seemed like miles, but in all probability was only a few hundred feet, in a straight line, before turning sharply to the left. The concrete inside the duct was rough and unfinished, snaring Dean's clothes and scratching at the area of exposed skin on his shins between his boots and the hem of his pants. Under his shirt, his back became raw and bruised from rubbing on the concrete ceiling of the narrow duct. The sharp corner was a problem, and for all the sinuousness that he could muster, he still wasn't sure that he could twist his protesting body and get the push from his legs that would take him around and onto the next stretch. There was no light at all now. The last vestiges from the lab, bleeding into the duct, were now just a memory. The cold draft of air had become stronger and even colder as he entered the straight section, moving on. His elbows were rubbed free of skin, but he focused on the pain, using it to drive him on. He refused to think about the possibility of the duct narrowing. There was no way he could crawl backward, and the terror of being trapped was actually too great for him to even contemplate. The air was freezing now, and his body shuddered with involuntary shivers, making progress even harder. But through the intense cold, Dean realized that he had reached a junction in the air ducts. The cold seemed to bear down on him from above, and his shoulders were like blocks of ice that were no longer being rubbed raw by concrete. It was too dark to see, but he could only surmise that he had reached a point where a larger central duct had been sunk as a shaft from the surface, which meant that there was more than this one duct. Logically, then, there had to be other exits. There was something of which he couldn't have been sure before now, but knowing that there was another way out cheered him and gave purpose to his determination. Testing the distance around him by extending his arms, he found that the central shaft was wide. Experimentally, he raised his head and shoulders, slowly, lest he crack his skull. There was no ceiling here. With great care not to cramp his protesting muscles, Dean found that he was able to stand in this part of the shaft and stretch his aching and confined limbs. He tilted his head and looked up. There was no sign of light, no indication of where the shaft eventually surfaced. After pausing for a few moments to savor his freedom from confinement and to breathe deeply of the cold air, Dean began to grope blindly around the perimeters of the shaft. It seemed to him that it was like the axle of a wheel, with the duct leading from the lab being one of the spokes that connected centrally to this point. Being sure to note where he began, not wanting to accidentally return the way he had come, he turned in a circle, feeling for the openings to the ducts. There were eight in all, seven for him to make his choice. Picking one diametric to the duct from the lab, he dropped to his knees again and struck out across the floor of the shaft and into the duct.
Just got to keep going for now.
Well, Cyclops, this is a nice little surprise.
Ryan would have started at the sound of Harvey's voice behind him, but he found that he was still unable to move freely. Jenna, on the other hand, had no such trouble. Squealing with faked fright, she jumped back from the one-eyed man, grabbing a fur from the bed and using it to cover herself. Her eyes took on an accusatory cast, and Ryan felt the heaviness lift from his mind. Independence returned to his limbs. He turned and saw that Harvey was standing in the opening to the chamber, the drapes held back. Alien stood beside him.
I think you may have some explaining to do, friend Carter.
Ryan shook his head.
I'm not going to explain myself. Think what you will.
The one-eyed man knew that whatever he said, he wouldn't be believed. If he tried to explain about Jenna's power, about Dean, about her proposition, none of it would be believed. The Baron was completely in her thrall.
This is no way to treat your hosts, Cyclops. I reckon it's just plain bad manners. Shall I chill the fucker now, Alien, or do you want to do it yourself?
The Baron held up a hand.
Not now, Harv. This will require a vil meet. Send the word out as soon as possible. I want everyone in the main hall. Then we'll decide what to do.
Jenna held her fur to her with a mock sense of embarrassment.
What to do? What do you mean? This one-eyed bastard tried to ravage me!
Ryan had to admit she was playing the part well.
We will make our decision later. As for you, Ryan Carter, you and your people will attend. By force, if necessary.
That won't be necessary.
Good. You perplex me, Ryan Carter. We shall see. Yes, we shall see. Now get from my sight.
Ryan made no reply and walked out of the chamber, passing the Baron and the Sec Chief without looking at them. He didn't look back at Jenna, either. Now they were faced with a possible firefight to get out alive, and there was still no sign of Dean. There was another tight corner in the concrete duct. This tunnel hadn't seemed as long as those leading from the lab, but Dean had no idea whether this was really the case, or just his imagination. In a sense, it was unimportant. All that mattered was reaching an exit. And perhaps this was it. As he squeezed himself around the corner of the duct, a faint light permeated the gloom. The duct was on a slight incline, which made it harder for him to crawl. His elbows felt as though they were worn to the bone, no longer hurting because the nerve endings had rubbed away. But the growing light gave him the impetus to go faster. The way out was almost in sight, and he couldn't fail now. It seemed to take forever, the grill at the end of the duct growing larger, tantalizingly, always out of reach. Each shuffling movement took an eternity. Sound started to leak into the shaft, a buzzing of idle conversation, the clattering of movement. Wherever Dean had landed, it was a heavily populated area. This knowledge spurred him on, and Dean quickened his pace, getting closer and closer to the grill. When he reached it, he could see why he had traversed an incline. The grill was situated high up in the wall of the tunnel, above the level of the heating and water pipes and the brackets for the lamps. He could see the tops of people's heads as they went about their business. He was in the central area where trade and commerce took place. Although there were a few people about, there were fewer than he would have expected from previous exploration, and through the hum of conversation he caught something about a raid on Sontvogel. It was all the more important that he find his father and his friends, if they were still alive. Dean tried to loosen the grill, cursing to himself as his constricted arms found it hard to get the necessary purchase to push the grill out of the wall. But slowly, it began to give. The two dreadlocked Sekhmen twins happened to be passing by and looked up at the grill.
Shit, it's the one-eyed man's boy. Quick, bro, give me something to stand on.
His brother grabbed a stool that sat by an unattended stall and gave it to the other man.
Hang on, boy, hang on.
Ant placed the stool beneath the grill and climbed up, pulling at the grill to assist Dean's restricted pushing. The grill gave way, and the sick man tossed it to the floor, taking hold of the boy as he slithered from the duct, blinking in the light.
Dean, take the boy!
The other twin seized Dean with all his strength, lowering the youth to the ground as Dean fell, upside down, from the opening of the duct. Dean sat on the floor of the tunnel, a small crowd gathering around him. Dee seized the boy by the hand, pumping it with a relieved smile.
Where have you been, boy? Where you been?
Dean found himself without the opportunity to answer, the man's concerned questioning cutting across his attempts to speak. So the youngster used the man's arm, hand still pumping, to pull himself to his feet.
Yeah, please.
Dean tried to speak between the concerned questioning, which was now beginning to come from a small crowd as Dean still found himself unable to answer.
Look, thanks, but I really can't stay. I really can't...
He shrugged, not able to finish the sentence. Detaching his hand, he backed away from his rescuer through the crowd.
No, no, I can't stop. Really, thanks.
Dean turned, looking around to orient himself. He now knew which way he had to go in order to reach the unit where his father and friends had been billeted. He started to run.